eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And here we are once again with Eat, Drink, Talk. This is Rick Redding with my co-host Steve Coombs. We're talking about eating and drinking and dining and, boy, a lot of fun stuff to do. And you know, Steve, you've been busier than me, but golly, there's a lot of events and interesting stuff to eat. But, you know, of course, maybe the best thing we had this week was the lunch we just enjoyed over at Lonnie's Hot Dogs, right?
It was really good. I'm not going to say it's the best, but it was really good. I like Lonnie's. In fact, I suggested it. I love it. It's just a good old,
it's amazing
simple
they
diner.
Got such a big line there. And then if you go in, you know, it's amazing that at a little place like that, it's smaller than the studio, they've got a table that's reserved.
Yeah, there was a four top reserved, and the three guys that sat there, they didn't look like reserved people. I don't know how to interpret that, but you know, to each his own. He and his wife have run that business well for quite a long time. Very nice people.
Well, great. Well, let's talk before we get into our guests, which are great. We'll talk about that and all the hard work you've been doing this week. We always like to talk about the favorite thing we've experienced during the week. And, you know, while I've got it on my mind, so we don't forget about it, let's start with that. You go first.
My favorite drink of the week was actually last Thursday at the Michter's Garden. But what do they call it? Garden patio or garden party dinner over at Whitehall, which I've never been to, and which is just absolutely fabulous place.
You were a little out of place out there.
I was. I'm telling you, I was surprised nobody handed me a gardening tool and told me to get trimming, brother. And but it was a 4-course dinner, and every course was paired with a cocktail. And some of the best mixologists in town were there that night to pair their food with Patrick Roney's food. Patrick Roney's the executive chef at Harvest. And my favorite drink from that menu was done by Eric Wentworth, who is the co-owner and bar manager at The Hub. And it was a Michter's whiskey, the American whiskey, with lemon and China, which is an Amaro, I think, and creme de cacao. It was brilliant. It just was an all-around excellent cocktail.
Man, you take good notes, I tell you. I went out to you know, there's been a lot of talk about one of the newest restaurants in town, the River House, and I went out there last night and had a great time, had a great meal of you know, I'd talked to John Veronese about this when they first opened, and I know it's one of your favorites, but the grouper cheeks,
yes,
is that's a to die for dish. I mean, I think it's one of the top dishes you know, I've had in the city.
Yeah, that's kind of wake up to that, people, if you haven't already. Cheek meat is an excellent part of any mammal or fish, if the fish actually has cheeks enough big enough to eat. But it's great. I'm not sure you would think it'd really be kind of tough since that spent all its life chewing, but I love it. Beef cheeks.
It's really thin
cheeks,
and lightly breaded, and you know, it was great. They had a couple of shrimp with it and this great sauce, so you know, that was the highlight of my week in culinary terms, I suppose. Yeah. And later on, I had a drink back at the bar, and I can't even find the name of it. And, you know, you take all these meticulous notes, and I
take a picture of the drink and a picture of the description. That's how I remember it.
We did take pictures of our drinks. This was a craft cocktail. You know, when I go to a nice restaurant, I like to get the craft cocktail menu and pick something out on that. And they've got a great one there at the Levee right next door to the River House.
Live music venue.
Yeah, it was great. They had a band played Standing on Shaky Ground, one of my favorite songs.
Delbert McClinton, he reminded me today.
Yeah, that's right.
I like Delbert.
So what did you you've been all over the place eating, so it's harder to choose, I guess, for you a favorite of the week.
Well, no, that wasn't that hard. I mean, I did have some great food this week, but that same dinner, the Michter's dinner was part of the Bourbon Affair, by the way. Patrick Roney did it was seared Kentucky Lake carp, and people go not seared, I'm sorry, cornmeal breaded and fried Kentucky Lake carp, and people think, ugh, you know, carp, really? Well, it's absolutely fantastic, and most people would be hard pressed to identify it as anything other than halibut like if they weren't even told what it was. But this is not a native species. It's an invasive species. And finally, there are two businesses for the past couple of years that have been hauling all this fish out of the lake like it needs to be out. Mm-hmm. And chefs are catching on to it. And Patrick bread it in cornmeal and pan fried it and served it over tasso grits. Tasso is a smoked Cajun ham, and it was just out of this world. It's one of the best things I've had in I don't know, memory. Maybe.
Wow.
It was great.
Well, it was cool. The whole week, the one event we both went to, Whiskey Live last week, was just, you know, was just tremendous.
Jam packed.
I tell you, there was a lot of people there, a lot of different things to drink, and some treats. You know, I had some chocolate from our friend Eric Chavez Graziano at Cellar Door Chocolates.
Always good stuff.
That was really good, and so that was great.
Did you drink any whiskeys? Anything?
I did.
Memorable?
I tried a scotch, and I just gotta, you know, admit my palate's not refined enough to really distinguish. It was, you know, I tried some and I said, okay, and then moved on.
Didn't like that peat flavor yet, huh?
I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to be going out and buying any scotch.
I'm working on scotch. It's I appreciate the difficulty in making it, but it's not my favorite flavor just yet. There were some great Irish whiskeys there that I enjoyed, and I just was determined to go in there and not taste anything that I'd already had, and much of the show was American whiskey.
Yeah.
And so we had to dodge a lot of those booths and not make eye contact with all these wonderful people in the bourbon industry that I know, so they wouldn't think I was dissing them because I love their stuff. But
yeah, well, have it. And you know, it was great to go to that event. I know we made kind of a joke on the post that you wrote for the site that you had your hands full, you didn't take any pictures. I actually got there right when Mayor Fisher was speaking and took a picture of him and Dave Sweet. You can find that on the eatdrinktalk.net site with some great words from Steve about the event. And I tell you, the site is really picking up. I know that you heard people at the Whiskey Live event talking about it.
That was great. That was great to hear people. And the young people, especially, was my experience, who enjoy podcasts and say, you know, I love podcasts, and this is something I want to do, is to get into yours and download it and use it. And, you know, if we can teach the old folks like me.
Well, I got some good news on that front. You don't even know we're going to talk about this, but in the last week, we have progressed and are available on search on iTunes.
Nice.
So if you go to iTunes, where you maybe listen to national podcast or NPR podcast, anything that you listen to there, if you type in Eat Drink Talk, we're going to come right up. And you can subscribe. And
that's great.
And that way the you'll get a notice every week that the new podcast is up.
Nice.
Every Friday.
I like that. I like that a lot. But you can also just go to eatdrinktalk.net and click on it.
Yeah.
On your browser on your phone and just take it to the car with you. Or take it out on your exercise walk like my wife does.
So, yeah you got to remember to do it. But if you subscribe, it reminds you, and that's all great. And there's a lot of stuff coming on eatdrinktalk.net. I want to just give people a heads up that we get a lot of great stuff coming on the website in addition to the podcast. And Steve's been writing some great stories, and we're going to, you know, start doing emails and doing a lot of stuff. So remind you on your daily trip around the web to stop at eatdrinktalk.net. There you go. So, Steve, let's talk about our guest.
Well, before we skip to the guest, let's add one more thing about the piece that I just wrote today.
Yeah.
And that is the headline, and not terribly provocative, but it says, "Step outside Louisville this summer and visit great Kentucky restaurants." And I have had the privilege in the past 2 weeks of driving about 1,500 miles across the state, visiting perhaps 70 restaurants and bars, you know, some of which I just came in and photographed, some of which I stayed and had something. I mean, you only have so much gut space, right? And I'm just blown away at the quality of restaurants in this state, especially in towns like Paducah, Pikeville, Bardstown, Corbin, Harrodsburg, Covington, Florence. I mean, all these different places that don't get talked about very much because of Louisville and Lexington. And that's not to say that any of those scenes rival those larger cities, but there are places worth driving to, like the Freight House. Sarah Bradley is the only chef in Kentucky with Michelin star restaurant creds to her, on her resume. Nobody else has it, and she has a brilliant restaurant called the Freight House in Paducah, the Harrison Smith House in Bardstown, absolutely worth a 35-minute drive to go enjoy Newman Miller's food. This guy is destined to become one of Kentucky's legendary chefs, I have no doubt. In fact, other chefs say that. Elizabethtown, 701 Fish House and Oyster Bar. I mean, I say in the story, I can't believe we let Chef David Scales get away from Louisville. I mean, yeah. Brilliant talent. You got to go down there and check it out. Covington has countless restaurants that would easily succeed in this market. So get out, it's time for a road trip. Don't have a weather complaint.
You know, I tell you, I used to have jobs where I traveled around the state, and it's typical for people who are just traveling around, just going on a business trip or something, it's so easy in these small towns. All it seems they have is fast food, and you get off and fill your belly at, hopefully not McDonald's, but one of those places, and these gems are everywhere. You just got to know about them.
You just got to know about it. And that's one of the pieces I'm going to do for the client is just called the tweeners. And, on your way to somewhere between this town and that town, you need to stop at these two places. And it was a blast to meet those people. And it just reminds me how friendly, I neglected to put it in the article, how friendly and hospitable the people in this state are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'd be fun to just plan a trip to, spend a day in some of these communities and go. And
maybe, absolutely.
For me, maybe play some golf or something in between meals. So that would be fun. But, while we're at it, you had some other interesting news on the site this week. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you're throwing me a curb there, Rick.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that.
What was it?
This is almost live radio.
Interesting stuff that I had written about. About Annie Petrie getting engaged. How about that? Annie Petrie, the sweet and super talented chef at Deca, is engaged finally. That's one off the market, boys. Sorry if you didn't catch it.
I love Deca. I have a lot of people. I was going to ask you this. Somebody stopped me on the street. I'm going to throw another curveball at you, Steve.
Yeah.
They said, it must be very difficult for you as this food writer and all that when somebody says, hey, what's the best restaurant? Where should I go when I'm in Louisville? What place should I go? I mean, how do you handle answering that question? I guess you.
Well, I've learned the hard way that 80% of the time they won't take my advice, so I've learned to let that go. And I figured I could make it a one floor speech, not even an elevator speech, and just say, well, my favorites are whether you like these, is your issue. But I'll say my favorites, and if they say, I like this type of food, I might throw a couple others out there. But I don't spend the time like I used to saying, hey, in this neighborhood and that neighborhood. Because people like what they like. Often they're just making conversation.
Yeah.
But easily, maybe even 90% of the time, if I follow up and say, how did you like such and such? Oh, we didn't go there. We went to Cracker Barrel. I kid you not. It's that
the Olive Garden was open.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm not sure why you asked me then, but... Yeah,
well, it is, but it is to ask somebody like you or even me or a local. There are so many restaurants that you're not going to know about that don't have a national reputation that the only way you're going to find out is word of mouth, really, or sometimes some of the local media covers some stuff. Well, that would lead into our little thing that Leo did this week, right?
Oh, their dining guide. Yeah. I actually did that one time in 1998 and lived to regret it because to Leo's credit, it's so thorough. I mean, it's really well researched, or it used to be in the past, and hopefully it still is now. But I mean, it was a yeoman's piece of work, it was interesting how they interviewed some of the folks in here, some local celebrities, I guess, of note, and asked them what their favorite dishes were, some of which we agreed with, some of which we thought.
Wonder why they didn't ask us.
Well, we're trying to take money out of their pocket, so that might be one reason why. But
I was glad to see my good friend Larry Muhammad in there. He's talking about Big Mama's Soul Food Kitchen. I haven't been there.
I haven't either, and I need to get down there.
But anyway, a lot of interesting interesting names and interesting people in there that.
And the lovely Erica Chavez Graziano is in there, and she had a lot of good recommendations.
Yeah, she really does. If you ask her what she, now you know what she would recommend.
The egg and bacon pizza at Blue Dog Bakery is unreal. Easily one of the best, one of my favorite bites in town. Let's just say that. I love it. That's funny. She gave props to the Majeska at Muse Candies. You know, giving some love to another candy shop. That's the kind of gal she is.
Yeah, that's really good.
When she said the that's pimento really cheese and bacon burger at Grind was one of her favorites. Easy to see why. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I still haven't been to Butchertown Grocery. That's a place I want to get to.
Yeah, I need to get
in
back.
In the future.
Yeah.
So anyway, lots of choices around the big city of Louisville, KY. And Steve and I are doing our best to go out and see as many of them as we can. And the personalities in this town are great, and I'm really anxious to hear your interviews. I got lazy this week and didn't do an interview. Steve did too, and has been working hard. And tell me about your guest, Steve.
Well, Rick's fudging a little bit there. He was not lazy. He was doing the business end of our business, so there were other things going on. I happen to be ahead. My two guests this week are fantastic restaurateurs. The first is Fernando Martinez, and everybody knows his restaurants is Muscle Burger Bar and Mercato Italiano. Gosh, what's the brilliant one in Westport Village? There's Guacamole was their first one, then El Taco Luchador, and I cannot believe I'm drawing a blank on it.
That Guacamole, it's a haven amidst all the chains out there.
Right, absolutely. Artesano, that's the restaurant in Westport Village. And I sat down with him and talked about this really neat exchange that he has been invited to be a part of, and I believe it's Food & Wine magazine that's hosting it. It's the culinary exchange in which, you know, he's a native. He came over on a raft. He was a refugee. And he is going back with celebrity chef Douglas Rodriguez. I'm sorry. He's from Miami. And celebrity chef's kind of bad, you know, distinction anymore. This guy's a real serious working chef. So I retract that part of my statement. And they're going back, and they are going to cook for several days with lots of other chefs from around the U.S. And they're going to Havana. And people are invited. They can go to this if they want to. Dean Corbett, I believe, is going to join him to have some fun. I mean, it's not cheap. I think it'll cost you about $4,500 a person to go. Wow. But I got to go to Cuba in 1998, and trust me, it is a beautiful country that is in need of some capitalism to polish it up, because it is, the historic buildings are falling down. They are in disrepair, and it's good news that these guys are going to get to go. And so he's going to talk about that.
They still got all those old cars down there, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It's fun to get. You could see about half American, half Russian cars, and all of them in various states of falling apart. But let's see. So he also, and stick with the full interview, because here's a guy that grew up in a socialist country, and communist country, actually, and just cannot stand the idea of government intervention into private businesses. And his arguments for him are really compelling. You should listen. Another interview this week was with Chris Williams, and Chris is the owner of the newly opened 502 Smokehouse and Sports Bar, and it's down at Cardinaltown.
I don't know anything about it, but it's well named.
Cardinaltown?
The 502 Smokehouse.
Yeah, he's done well. So Chris has, for if you're a food truck fan, he has had the 502 barbecue truck for 4 years now, and according to anybody that's gone to like the flea off market?
Yeah.
Apparently, they just have a line forever to get their stuff. And Chris decided to go ahead and open a bricks and mortar operation. And we went about a month ago, and it was fantastic. And it's just fun to talk to, you know, these young, enthusiastic, motivated entrepreneurs and get their idea about how they, you know, got into it and why they do it and what to expect when you go down there. So really engaging interview.
What a great deal it is to be a U of L student now. When I was a student, it was like cafeteria food. But those guys, they got that row in Cardinaltown. There's all those choices.
It's awesome.
From Qdoba, Jimmy John's, and the Noodle Company I know is down there, and Griff's.
Right.
I can't think of all of them.
Is Comfy Cow down there still?
There's a Comfy Cow there too. So those students, I mean, if they got the money, they can eat well.
And if you are a U of L student that went to the China Inn, it is still there, and that's the next-door neighbor of 502 Smokehouse and Sports Bar. So I spent a lot of time and a lot of money at the China Inn eating Warsugai. I think it was $5 at lunch with a drink.
There you go. Well, that was fun. Well, we're going to get on with the interviews. Before we go there, anything going on this weekend? Steve, you want to tell the folks about?
Nothing that I can point to off the top of my head.
Okay. I am actually riding in the Bike MS event on Saturday. It's a bike ride to raise money for MS. And you know, I was just interested. They call it Bike MS. It's Bluegrass Bikes Bourbon and Barbecue. And you know, it just amazes me how people throw the name bourbon into things to
There'll be bourbon cereal sometime, yeah. I'm sure. Bourbon Cheerios.
Bourbon flavored. So, you know, once I get off 25 miles on the bike, maybe I'll see what kind of bourbon they have.
Yeah, water first. Water and something in your gut because you'll be dehydrated, I'm sure. Or low on water, we'll say.
Yeah, that's a good plan. All right, Steve. Well, I want to remind everybody to during the week, go to eatdrinktalk.net. Please talk it up amongst your friends. If you are a business or something, Steve mentioned I was on the business side. If you want to advertise with us or be a sponsor of this show, please get in touch with me at rick@eatdrinktalk.net. And you can get in touch with Steve at steve@eatdrinktalk.net. And if you want to be on the show, have an idea for the show, please get in touch with us. So right now we're going to move on to the interview. I guess Fernando's going to be up first.
That's correct. See you next week, folks.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Sheriott,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
So my guest this week is Fernando Martinez, chef and entrepreneur at Ole Restaurant Group. Most of you know him as the creative and culinary inspiration behind Artesano, behind soon-to-be Red Barn Kitchen, behind Muscle and Burger Bar, Chena, The Place Downstairs, and El Taco Luchador. Did I get them all?
Yeah, and guacamole.
And guacamole. How can I forget that? The first. How unfair of me to miss guacamole. I'm really excited to talk about this dinner you guys are going to get to do in Cuba. And it's under the banner of the Food and Wine Culinary Exchange. How did this idea come about?
You know that I used to work for Chef Douglas in Miami, and you know we have become really good friends. So
this is Douglas Rodriguez.
Douglas Rodriguez, yeah. Right. So you know we met in Cuba in January, and you know he's taking groups of people over there and showing people the island and
for tours,
and mm-hmm. he's doing like a small culinary tour. So you know we were eating at this place, and I'm like, you know, why is nobody doing, you know, a food and wine festival in, you know, in Havana? And he's like, you know, I think we should do it. So he took it upon himself and started calling, wineries and different businesses that, you know, in the future would be interested in doing business in Havana. So he got a few sponsors, and then he started talking to Iberostar. It's one of the biggest hotel chains in Cuba. They have mm-hmm. the Melia Havana and Melia Varadero, you know, all the
I've been to
Melia
the Buena
hotels. There you
yeah.
go. So, you know, they let him use one of the hotels that they have, you know, huge facilities for the chefs to cook, you know, in those facilities. So that's how the whole idea, you know, came about.
Is this something that an American tourist could go to?
Yeah, actually you can go to the site and you can buy the whole package through Havana Tours. It's one of the tourist operators, and that includes, you know, visits to the whole festival. So you can go to the link and look at the website and you'll be able to, you know, purchase the whole package. And you know, they I think you fly from Miami to Havana, but you have to cover your flight to Miami. But after that, it's all included on that in that price.
So that's a whole lot easier than when I went
to
Cuba.
Yeah.
I had to go through Cancun, 7-hour layover.
You used to have to go through a third country because, you know, they didn't allow you to go. Now they have the people-to-people program that, you know, allows, you know, people from here, from the United States, to visit Cuba.
So, Douglas Rodriguez, that makes sense. You going, that makes sense. Yaniel, is that how you pronounce his name, by the
Yaniel.
Way?
Yaniel. It's like Daniel, but with
a
y.
J.
With the, well, J.
Pronounced, well, the Jota pronounced like a
Yaniel, yeah, like a Y.
So that all makes sense. But Dean Corbett's going to go with you.
Well, Chet Douglas came in. It's been in Louisville a couple of times, and he met Dean Corbett, and everybody likes Dean, so they became good friends. And Dean, I think he visited Douglas in Miami, and he said, I want to invite Dean Corbett, and Dean, he's up for an adventure always.
Always, absolutely. Now, you left Cuba on a raft as a refugee in what year?
1994.
How is it going back to that country now? For one, does the government treat you comfortably and fairly?
I actually was able to go back after 5 years when I became a citizen of the United States. So, to them, I wasn't, a citizen of Cuba anymore.
So that was okay with them?
Yeah. I brought, hard dollars, what socialist doesn't like hard dollars,
I remember getting changed for American money in Cuba and thinking, what the heck? How's that happen?
Oh, yeah. You probably lost 10% too. That's another thing of socialism. How do they decide the price of their currency,
So when you go back, do you think, boy, I really miss this?
It's where I was born. I really love my country, and I miss my friends, and I miss the ocean. But until the system doesn't change, I don't think I can live there. Now I've been, I remember when I first came to the States and I was going to say something, against, the government or Castro, I would lower my voice. Because, I lived there for 18 years, and I grew up with that fear of, big government listening to what you're saying, and they have eyes and ears everywhere. So it took me a couple of years to actually, and it's funny because Cubans, when they come from Cuba now, and we start talking about Cuba and how things are going in the government, you can see that they do the same. They actually lower their voice so nobody listens to what, to what they're saying. Like somebody's watching them, and they're already here. So, that's one of the things that, I don't miss. But I miss, the ocean and the food and the music and my friends and,
Now, I went 18 years ago, and we were followed. Not closely, but closely enough. That doesn't happen much anymore, does it?
I think they do it, but only with, certain people, like big celebrities. I mean, because if they follow everybody that is going to Cuba now, they're going to have, the whole island following people, and tourists. Because, you go over there right now and 80% of the tourists are coming from the United States.
So what foods are you going to cook there? Because obviously you don't want to go just cook Cuban food because that's what they have every day.
Well, we're doing a big Cuban dinner. We call it a Noche Buena. It's like, when you do a Christmas dinner in Cuba. We do it the 24th instead of, the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
So the last night we're actually going to do a big Cuban dinner, but one of the nights we're doing a Chino Latino day that we're doing Cuban and Chinese fusion together. So I'm gonna do steam bombs that they do, that they call them bao. So I'm gonna do a take on a Cuban sandwich with pork belly and Chinese mustard and pickle, carrots and stuff like that, and do a take on a soy mojo. I'm going to do ropa vieja dumplings, stuff like that. That is going to be, instead of, using beef, I'm going to do lamb ropa vieja and, stuff it in a dumpling. So it's going to be kind of like a little take on, Chinese Cuban cuisine.
Now, it's challenging to find food there sometimes at the quality that you would
like.
Will you have to bring some?
Yes, we're going to take a lot of stuff. I'm actually going to be there probably, a week or a week and a half before, so I can start sourcing everything that we need. But they're allowing us to import a lot of the things we're going to need for the event.
So, will Cubanos be able to attend?
Yes, we're actually having the same amount of Cuban chefs, at the event as, American chefs, and I think it's open to the public, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you've written a bit in social media about what you believe to be Americans America's slant toward socialism, as we talk so much with Bernie Sanders and the dialogue over the upcoming presidential race. And you're always the voice of caution to say, this is dangerous. And I've seen it firsthand, not only in Cuba, but in Venezuela, when you and your wife and your kids were there for about a year, right?
Yeah.
Well, to talk about that a little bit, having already had that experience and seeing that it's failed.
You know, let me give you a little story. When I met Christina, was at the same time, and we met here in Louisville, it was at the same time.
That this is your wife.
My wife, mm-hmm. Christina. That Chavez was going into power in Venezuela. So, you know, I told Christina, tell your family to get ready to leave Venezuela because things are not going to change over there. And I remember having a conversation with Christina's dad and telling him, hey, Mr. Luis, you know, Venezuela is going to go in the way of Cuba. And, you know, he didn't like it. And I remember him telling me, you know, Venezuela is not Cuba. We're not an island. We're never going to, what happened in Cuba is never going to happen in Venezuela. And he actually didn't speak to me for a whole year.
Oh, wow.
And now, every time we see each other, he tells him, Fernando, you were so right. I mean, look at what's happening in Venezuela right now.
It's collapsing.
The country with the biggest oil reserves. Venezuela used to be a paradise. Now it's a capital of crime in the whole world. It's more dangerous to go to Venezuela than to go to Iraq. How do you explain that?
Oh, wow.
Kidnapping, killing, inflation, it's rampant in Venezuela right now. People are rioting in the streets. You know, you cannot, you know, what socialists always do, they promise, they promise, they promise, they promise. But then what happens when you run out of money? What happens? Everybody starves. That's what is happening in Cuba. Mm-hmm. You know, if socialism was such a good idea, why even the Cuban government is going back to capitalism? Because that's what they're doing. They're
right.
Privatizing companies. They're allowing people to have their own businesses. Because only citizens and businesses create value. Government only takes away.
Which, and we saw that happen in China. I mean, it's heavily shifted toward capitalism.
And look, you know, half of, you know, the Chinese population is out of poverty because of free market.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, crony capitalism that we're living right now.
Right.
I'm talking about true free market where big companies don't have monopolies, you know, where if you have a better product and you take it to market, you can actually compete. There's no, I mean, history, it's always, you know, history doesn't lie. It doesn't. Look at the Soviet Union. Look at, you know, East Germany. Look at all those countries. The same thing happened because once you take incentive off the equation, why should I? You know, it's like I was talking to one of my employees the other day, and I said, you know, now, you know, they're raising the, you know, if an employee makes less than $47,000, you have to pay them overtime. And I said, you know what? We might be able to do that. But what happens to the other guys who only make 3-5% profit margin?
Right.
What happened to those guys? What happened to the small mom and pop places?
They can't afford that.
Do you think
saying.
They can take it? That hit? They can. Why should an owner that is working 70, 80 hours a week, sacrificing time with their family, sacrificing, you know, their youth, would keep doing it? I close my doors and, you know, so what happens to the rest of the employees?
Right.
Who's going to give him? How are they going to feed their families? So, you know, government doesn't create value. It distorts the market. You know, the perfect example right now is what's happening in this city and probably the whole United States. There's a boom in the restaurant business. Cooks can determine how much they want to make. A good cook can walk into a restaurant tonight and say, I want to make $16 an hour.
Wow.
And they would, we're paying $13 an hour in downtown. To do dishes over there. And we can even find people. So how are you going to... And we're willing to train... You know that people getting minimum wage at McDonald's and Raleigh's and all those chain restaurants? Send them our way. I train them.
So, and how would you like to see this situation change? What if you were the mayor of Louisville tomorrow,
what would you say relative to restaurants only? This is how we're going to change it and make this a better free market.
Just have the government, you know, I understand that there has to be some regulation, but government should get out of the way of, you know, private businesses, you know. Again, it's going back to free market. Allow people to, you know, look at Singapore, Chile, after, you know, they had Allende and the whole socialist thing, they went through a crisis. Now Chile is one of the, you know, best economies in South America. You know, they're calling it the, you know, the European country in South America. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's free market. It's a free market economy. People working hard, they're not overtaxed. You know, that's how you create true value.
Fernando Martinez, always, thanks for your restaurants and thanks for your views.
Thank you.
Garcon, I think I'll have another.
Today we're at 502 Cafe, Smokehouse, and Sports Bar. Did I get that right, Chris
you
Williams?
Did. Yep, it's a mouthful.
Chris Williams is the owner and the pit master, as it were. Is that right? Is that a fair title?
I'll take it.
And you opened officially when? Was it 3 weeks ago?
This is our third Monday, so yeah, exactly. Well, 2 full weeks.
Well, you look, you know, pretty well slept and rested. Is that right? Or you just uh-huh. have that youthfulness to cover up? Or, yes, uh-huh. as he gives me an insincere grin, folks. One of these days we're going to have video and we're going to be able to show that kind of stuff. So how's business going so far?
Oh, it's really great. Lunches have really taken off with the faculty and staff around here. There's a lot of construction with the dorms going on, so we're getting all those guys. Some of them meet here every single day. It's awesome.
No kidding.
Yeah, dinners are a little slow, but we'll pick that up as soon as the kids get back, and we'll be all right.
Now, is the summer session... I mean, surely some people are doing summer courses right now, right?
There are a few, and we do get a few of those guys, and they're telling their friends, and they can't wait for everybody to come back and let them know. But there's not a whole lot around here. We are getting some people on their way home from work, because we're right here in the thoroughfare. So,
now, what is the name of your food truck, because you still have it?
It's just 502 Cafe on the food truck.
And how many years did you run that before?
4 years.
For 4 years, and it's still going?
It's still going. We had it out just about every day last week, and we got it out just about every day this week.
So are you trying to spread yourself between both outfits? Or
I'm not doing lunches on the truck. I have people running that, but big events I'm doing on the truck.
That's good marketing, I would imagine, right?
Oh, it's the best free marketing we have.
And you make some sales along the way, too, right?
Yep. Yeah, and now, usher people here with it, yeah.
And legend has it that, especially at like the, what's it, the flea off market, right? That you're there really regularly, right?
Yeah, we've been there since the second one, I think. Yeah.
You get a long line there, right?
We do, all day long.
That's great, man. Is it just me, or does it seem to be a lack of great barbecue in Louisville? And was that the open door for you to do a restaurant as opposed to just a food truck?
There's some good barbecue in Louisville. There's some guys doing some really neat stuff. But I think that this area specifically was really lacking in any good barbecue. So we found this place, and we knew it was one of the few places that doesn't have a lot of barbecue. And we think that we have a great product and found a great area to put it in.
Why do you think... There is compared to pizza places, for sure, there's a dearth of it. Why do you think that is? I have my feelings on that. But
As far as why there's so many...
Yeah, why are there so few barbecue places?
It's not the easiest thing to do.
Absolutely. Amen.
It takes a lot of time and a lot of love. And a lot of people just don't have the dedication to do it, I think.
It's a dirty business.
It is.
I mean,
it's my wife... Every day I come home, she's like, "Oh, you smell like work." I'm like, "Well, I can't really get to escape the smoke."
That smells like honey, money, honey.
Yeah,
that's what it is. So what makes yours different from all the others?
I think I really just don't cut any corners when it comes to the time and the effort it takes. Sometimes, you know, meat will take 18 hours, and I think it's going to take 12, and I'm really going to take that time to do it. I'm not going to cut it short. I think that we've really mastered a dry rub that imparts beautiful flavor to the food, and you've come up with a good combination of woods that just really makes it nice.
So what might take 18 hours versus 12? Brisket?
Brisket can. I've had butts go for 24 hours. They just stalled, didn't move, and they were the most tender butts at the end of the day. But yeah,
now the home smoker might wrap that in foil to push it past the stall.
The Texas crutch.
That's all right. I love that thing. Is that something you ever use?
I do use it sometimes. I don't think it's necessarily cheating. I mean, the Texans have been doing it for years and years and years, and they have the best barbecue in the country. So
it just confines the heat,
right? It does, and it actually hold some of the juice in there too. You can really keep the juices as opposed to just leaving it on the grate. You'll lose everything.
But talk about that for people listening later who might not know what the stall is and then why the Texas crush pushes that past.
The stall is when the meat reaches a certain temperature. Every cut's a little bit different.
It's about 160-ish?
Yeah, right around there. And it can sit there for hours. And as the collagens and the meat just kind of stop breaking down. And the Texas
and the collagens hold the fibers of muscle together, correct?
Yeah, so that's where your toughness is and the collagens, so you need that to break down. And then the Texas crutch will kind of almost steam the food in a little bit and accelerate the cooking process and bring it up a little bit faster.
By retaining more heat than it's losing, right?
Yep. And keeping the moisture. The moisture kind of adds a little steam to it, too.
Yeah, and barbecue is far more scientific than even many barbecuers know.
I mean, a hard time wrapping my head around it sometimes.
You just know what works, is that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, what so far has been the big seller here? Is it ribs? Is it brisket? What?
Brisket, I think. I mean, brisket was our flagship on the food truck, and I think that's carried over here. Ribs have really taken off. The barbecue hot brown is what I recommend every because it's my personal favorite on the menu right now.
It is good. I had that. I was fortunate enough to come to your soft opening. Thank you again for inviting me.
Of course.
And on that night, not only did we get to taste a lot of your barbecue, we tasted a bunch of different side items. I mean, really unique stuff.
Yeah, we are doing the bacon and cheese stuffed tots, which are essentially just a giant tater tot with bacon and cheese inside of them. We're doing the jalapeno truffle mac and cheese balls, which are a little bit spicy, but they're very unique and definitely very much us. Tachos, our version of the nachos. Lots of pretty fun stuff.
I was really taken by the stuffed smoked jalapenos. Talk about those.
The ABTs. Those are actually a thing in the buffalo, or the barbecue world, rather. Atomic Buffalo Turd is what ABT stands for. But it's a real thing in the barbecue world. Most people use little smokies, but we use chorizo in ours is the difference. And it's half a jalapeno, stuff the cream cheese chorizo, wrap it in bacon, and smoke it for about 6 hours.
And so do you blanch the jalapeno ahead of time?
I don't. I just
let
let the smoker do all the work on that.
How much did you pull, just the seeds or some
seeds
of the membranes out, too?
And the reeds, yeah. I get all that
seeds,
out.
I've never heard that. Seeds in the reeds. I always get people to call it, membrane or whatever. Cool. Seeds in the reeds. Now, obviously, you got a huge menu here, but when you're out at the food truck, what do you typically serve?
We do brisket, pulled pork, pulled chicken, mac and cheese, baked beans, and coleslaw. And then sometimes we'll do corn on the cob if it's in season.
That's a ton.
Yeah. It's a decent-sized menu, but, it's what everybody expects us to have, and that's what we're going to have. We'll do specials, too. We'll do dinosaur bones, which are beef ribs, all kinds of stuff.
So when I was here for the soft opening, I saw a bunch of Louisville chefs. It was one of those nights like, hey, who's cooking around town? They're all down here at Chris's place. To get that kind of a peer group, you had to have worked with them. Let's talk about your past cooking in Louisville here.
Actually, I didn't have a lot of cooking. I've just worked in a lot of restaurants. I was the GM at Lily's, manager at Bluegrass Brewing Company, worked at Dark Star, Pizza Hut. I mean, lots of different places around town. Most of my cooking I actually did at home. When I lived in Wisconsin, I learned some of the finer techniques when I worked at the country club, but mostly self-taught.
But, I mean, Reed Johnson was down here. And for people listening, Reed is the guy that Red Barn Kitchen.
Yep, he's amazing.
He is a smoking fool.
Yeah, he's amazing.
How did you guys meet each other?
Bluegrass Brewing Company. He was a chef at Bluegrass Brewing Company when I was working there. And we've been beside each other at some barbecue competitions and we've become good friends.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. How cool. So for people who hear this and want to visit, share the address and your hours of operation so make sure I don't neglect that.
It's 1923 South 4th Street. We are open 11 to 2 Monday through Saturday, and then Sundays noon to 2.
And for U of L students who certainly went to the China Garden many times, that is the name of it, right? China Garden, excuse me. It's right next door to that.
Yeah.
You just might not recognize it with all the new buildings.
Yep, besides Grace Bookstore. All the college kids go there, so they're easy to find.
So when you're not here, where do you like to go out to eat around town?
Well, I just went to Gospel Bird yesterday. Had a great experience. Hilare is one of my favorite places to go. Hang out at the bar. It's a great setting. Anything Fernando does, I enjoy.
I think Hilare, as busy as it is, and it's constantly busy, doesn't get enough love from the food cognoscenti because they think, well, it's just Italian. Talk about why Josh Moore's food is so incredible.
I mean, it's kind of like us. He puts a lot of love into his food. He really does. I mean, it's not just, you're not going to go there and just get spaghetti and meatballs. I mean, he's doing all kinds of, different technical Italian dishes.
Right, very, very precise.
Yeah, that people neglect, I think, and I think he's really taken over that and owned it.
And the bar. Talk about
that. Oh, the bar.
Sean Thibodeau.
Yeah,
right?
Me and my wife love going there. So the bar's half price bottles of wine every night. I mean, you can't.
Is that right?
Yeah. You can't beat that. But yeah, and then they have a great little bar menu. You can eat there really affordably. And I think people don't realize that, is that the bar menu is extremely affordable.
Or you can just say, Josh, turn me on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he starts setting stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're gonna leave full and happy.
That's right. You got to make sure you stop the momentum before you're ready to burst, because it'll keep coming and you're three dishes behind.
Yep.
If you were to point to another barbecue around town that you learned anything from or you've eaten his or her smoked food, who's that?
Steve Bowles. He used to own Pepperwood Barbecue. Actually bought my food truck from him.
Really going in the past with him.
He has taught me quite a bit, and he's probably one of the people I respect more than anybody else in the barbecue world in City Louisville.
Where's he now?
He's just doing catering. He helps out with nonprofits and things like that. And you can find him, Pepperwood.
What did he teach you?
What did he teach me? If you ask him, everything under the sun. but, you know, he taught me the patience that it takes to really get things done properly and to actually take the care. And that he really instilled that in me. I'm very thankful for that.
Such as, again, for the guys listening at home and thinking, I want to give this a shot. I've got a decent Weber grill. I've got some basic tools.
I hope you have all the time in the world, and your wife is very understanding of the fact that you're going to sit there for hours and hours and hours and say, honey, I can't do that. it really is just a whole lot of time and trial and error.
Because walking away isn't the best option, is it?
It isn't. You could lose temperature. You could get too much heat. Lots of bad things.
Well, so where do you suggest they get their meat if they're shopping around town? Is there a good source?
Sam's and Costco actually have a really great selection. Costco especially has a lot of prime that you can get at a great price.
And occasionally you'll find some really fatty brisket there.
Yes.
Occasionally,
yeah. But that's the great thing about that, as opposed to like buying packaged stuff, is you can actually look at each brisket and kind of check it out and figure out which ones you want and leave the other ones for somebody else.
And that's a big commitment, though, isn't it? Get a Costco brisket, it's about $80.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Restaurant Depot is another good one if you happen to have a membership there, because you can get it by the case, which is nice.
So, sauce, no sauce?
Optional. We don't sauce unless they want it.
And when your barbecue comes into your plate, are you hitting it with sauce, or is it just...
I'm going to taste the sauce. If I'm putting sauce on it, then it might be a little dry, in my opinion. But some people love that. I'm personally a dry rub guy.
And that's it. There's a really famous barbecue here in Texas that everybody's following now.
Franklin. Aaron Franklin.
And what's their rub? It's the simplest.
It's salt and pepper.
That's it.
It's amazing. I haven't had it. I can't wait to try it.
We need to get in line like today.
For tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. And he runs out every single day by like 3 o'clock. It's amazing.
And Ryan Rogers, I think he said that was the only disappointing thing about his Texas trip was
didn't get to
the try. No, he did.
Oh, he did. Get
he
to
said
try.
The 3.5 hour wait, but he said it was fantastic. Chris
awesome.
Williams, thanks for being on Eat Drink Talk with us. We really appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for having me.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.